Support for programming on NET Radio comes from Cornerstone Bank, a family-owned bank providing custom investments, trust, and estate planning services since 1882 with 43 central Nebraska locations. CornerstoneConnect.com. Cornerstone Bank, building trust on a solid foundation. Support for programming also comes from Union Bank and Trust, with hardship loans and special considerations to help customers through these uncertain times. The people of UBT are here for Nebraskans and available by phone anytime. Member FDIC. Good morning and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio. Most of today's show is pre-recorded as we protect ourselves and our guests from the spread of COVID-19. I'm Genevieve Randall. Just ahead this morning, I'll have a conversation with author Alana Massad about her debut novel. Later in the show, we'll hear how Jazz in June is doing things this year. And Nebraska comedian and speaker Julie Burney has a performance tonight on the Lead Live Online series. I'll talk with her in about 20 minutes. We'll start the show this morning with a track from accordion player extraordinaire Dan Newton, also known as Daddy Squeeze. He's in Minnesota these days, but he is originally from Nebraska. In fact, he won the Nebraska State Accordion Contest at the Wilbur Czech Festival back in 1987. El Camino a Mi Corazón, or The Path to My Heart, is his original work from the album La Vie Musette, with guests from his band Café Accordion Orchestra. That was El Camino Mi Corazon, or The Path to My Heart, written and played by Dan Newton. He's originally from Nebraska, but is in Minnesota these days. And you can find more information about him on the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. Stay with Friday Live in about 7 minutes. Brandon Thomas talks with Spencer Munson about this year's Jazz in June. Thanks for listening to Friday Live. My first interview guest is author Alana Massad with the University of Nebraska Lincoln Department of English. She's also a podcast host. It's called The Other Stories, which features fiction writers. She was to appear at Francie and Finch in Lincoln for a book event, but as she wrote online, authors need to step up their virtual game during the pandemic, unable to get out there for those book signings. That's one reason I'm talking with her today, all about her book, All My Mother's Lovers. Alana, it's great to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me, Genevieve.
This is your debut, and it's already on a number of lists of books to look for by O Magazine, BuzzFeed, Cosmopolitan, and so many more. Congratulations on all that.
Thank you. It's very exciting and not at all expected.
Maybe a place to start might be, there's an inscription in the front of this book to, I'm going to probably mispronounce it, to Ema Andy, my mother, who is not the mother in this book. I wonder if that's a place to start explaining this book a little bit in that inscription, because I do feel like it's connected to the story that you tell in this novel, in that it's a lot about family relationships.
The reason I chose that inscription was because I knew that quite often debut novelists are kind of assumed to be writing autobiographical stuff in some way. And this book really isn't. And as my mother is, thank goodness, very much alive, I didn't want people to sort of think that I was writing about her in some veiled way. And the book is about a 27-year-old named Maggie, whose mother dies at the very beginning of the book. She and her mother had a very fraught relationship, which is pretty much the opposite of the relationship that my mother and I have, which is just another reason to make sure that people don't think it's my mom in the book.
Your main character is Maggie, and she really is dealing with some interesting navigation in the novel after her mother's death. I think they had some tensions perhaps in their relationship over her sexuality, but it turns out that her mother had some secrets too. So where did the idea come from to explore relationships in that way between those tensions about Maggie's life and the secrets that her mother kept?
I think that one of the reasons that I wanted to explore it that way was because my generation, I'm a millennial. There's a lot of tension between millennials and boomers because of the kind of different circumstances that we've come of age in. But ultimately, I think that we probably share a lot more than we don't share. One of the things that I think that many young people forget, and I know that I certainly did for a while or didn't know or think about, is that our parents had lives before we were born, and they were rich and complex, and those lives continue to be rich and complex even after we're born. Parents, as much as being parents is important to them, are also human beings who are not only parents, they are also other things. They are also lovers and people with hobbies and people with secrets and people with shameful, complicated things that happened in their past. And I think that one of the ways that we often, just as human beings, miss each other in various ways is by sort of forgetting that we're all very complicated and that we all are coming from somewhere and have reasons for the things that we do. And so I really wanted to sort of dig into what it's like for someone who is not getting along with their mother because of her mother's inability to really understand her sexuality and her queerness. what it would be like for her to need to then deal with her own mother's sexuality, whatever form that might take.
I did wonder if Maggie learns about herself or if she sees her mother differently. Like, which way does that thinking go as she's kind of meeting these various men that her mother had relationships with? I wonder if it changes her view of her mother more or if it changes her view of herself more.
I think it's a little bit of both. I was actually doing an interview yesterday where someone gave me an alternate title for the book, which I think works quite well, which is You're Wrong About Your Mother, which I think probably most of us are in some way. So I think that she definitely learns a lot about her mother, but by learning about her mother, she also learns things about herself, because one of the things that I think she realizes is that she and her mother are a lot more similar than she would ever really have considered beforehand.
You're finishing up your doctoral degree at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Where were you before that, and how did you come to Nebraska?
I was living in New York City before this. People sometimes still assume that I live in New York City, which is pretty funny. And I applied to PhD programs after working in the city for a few years after college. The PhD program that accepted me first and that gave me the first call that was very exciting, it was Dr. Julia Schleck from UNL's English department, gave me a call on a February afternoon. It was just so exciting, and I came and visited the campus, and I loved the city. It's time for a change, and I came here, and I really like it here in many ways, and I've made a life here, and I found so many wonderful people, and I love our department. I've been pretty impressed with how UNL has been handling things during the pandemic. So, yeah, I mean, I never knew that I would end up here, but I've learned so much because of moving here. I feel it's really broadened my horizons.
I wonder about that with the pandemic. We mentioned, of course, in my intro how this is very different for authors. This is your debut book, though. I don't know if you have a press junket necessarily to compare to. How has it been for you releasing this debut during this time?
It's been strange, mostly because I probably would be distracted by other things anyway, but the sort of distraction from my book right now is just so much bigger and is so much more emotionally weighty. And we're all, I think, worried and scared and angry about people we love, worried how they're doing, or worried about how our various governments, local or federal, are dealing with the pandemic. The distraction has been sort of larger than it might have been otherwise. But in other ways, it's also been really beautiful to see the way that the literary community really galvanized around debut authors especially, but in general, authors releasing books during this time, and really sort of figured out quite quickly alternate ways of creating community and creating spaces in which we could still come together for the purpose of art, for the purpose of sharing words, for the purpose of sharing books. And I think that during times of crisis, many of us turn to various art forms anyway. So in that way, it's been really reassuring and soothing to sort of have that community come together so beautifully.
I've been talking here with author Alana Massad. Her debut novel is titled All My Mother's Lovers. Nice to have a new story and a novel to explore, especially during these times. Alana, thanks for talking with me about your brand new book.
Thank you, Genevieve. It was such a pleasure.
And you can find more information about our author by linking through to her website on our website. Just look for the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. Teaching, learning, and community is what it is all about for the Calabrasca Arts Initiative as it starts its seventh year next month. Brandon Thomas spoke with co-founder Erica Larson-Dockray about the effect of switching to online classrooms and what that will mean for the program.
Part of the reason that I do this is because I felt a little bit like a black sheep. And not that I didn't have a great community in Scotts Bluff. We had access to technology and all of these great inspirational medias, but I also didn't have the ability to connect with other kids who were finding the same interests as me. So I'm really excited about this online format of creating those connections with kids across the state who may feel like they're kind of on their own or finding their little tribe, I guess you could say.
Learn what kind of classes the Kalibraska Arts Initiative will offer in this week's Friday Live Extra podcast, available wherever podcasts are found or online at netnebraska.org/radio. You're listening to Friday Live on NET Radio and netnebraska.org. Still to come on the show, poetry from Marge Sizer. We'll hear a new song from Hope Dunbar's upcoming album. And in about 11 minutes, we'll meet the performer on tonight's Lead Live Online series.
I'm Brandon Thomas. Jazz in June has been a Lincoln tradition for over two decades, and often thought of as a true sign that summer has officially arrived. The festival has included at times a farmer's market, food vendors, art exhibits, and international jazz musicians. This year's festival will be a different experience. Here to talk about that is music director and festival curator Spencer Munson. Thank you for taking the time today, Spencer.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What are some of the biggest challenges you've had to overcome in finding this new format?
You know, the biggest challenge was, of course, financial. We had a number of sponsors that, of course, wanted to redirect their funds towards healthcare and human services at this time, which we totally understood. So from there, it can be kind of difficult to have those conversations with funders about the need, because we feel that music is, you know, COVID relief in itself, both not only bringing joy to our community, but also kind of shifting focus and still being able to support a lot of folks that rely on that income, whether it's being a performer, being a technician, or an organizer. You know, we wanted to keep people employed.
This year, the festival will feature all local musicians. Would you like to talk about who's performing?
Who are these
local performers?
We're kicking the season off with a young woman that grew up in Lincoln, is now living in Omaha. Her name is Mary Lawson, and she goes by Misan Jix. Really cool amalgamation of hip-hop, soul, and jazz. She recently opened up for Kamasi Washington at the Slowdown, which is the last live concert that I was able to see before the COVID crisis hit. You know, she's a breath of fresh air. She's got a really amazing band around her, and I'm excited for her to kick the season off. Our second artist is a young drummer that is not only performing in probably every UNL jazz combo, but he's also the go-to jazz drummer for a lot of the established jazz bands here in Lincoln. His name is Andrew Ray, but he's gonna do some cool stuff with Ableton and using his computer and technology to show how he's making jazz with loops, and not only from behind the drum kit as a percussionist, but also as a composer. For the third week, we have a young woman named Madeline Riddell, who cut her teeth in the Omaha Blues Society's youth program, was also a intern for Jazz in June in her first year. I believe she's going into her senior year and is already performing at major venues in Lincoln and Omaha. She's going to have, I believe, a quintet behind her doing some really amazing vocal jazz numbers. The fourth week is the doctor, Dr. Andrew Janik, who is originally from Chicago and did his graduate and doctoral studies at the University of Nebraska and now teaches at Bellevue and Doane. And then last but not least, it's kind of our, I guess maybe our famous local jazz musician, Jackie Allen, and her husband, Hans Sturm. We thought that they would be an excellent pair because they've just recently released an album, this bass and voice combo. I know that they were able to do some really cool stuff, just the two of them, so they didn't have to worry about social distancing and practicing with the full band. And we're really excited to see what kind of stuff they put together as well. I think another thing I'd like to add, and we wanted to thank the Pearl Francis Finnegan Foundation for supporting our jazz education programs. We normally are able to take these touring musicians that come into town from all over the country and insert them into community centers, work with youth from 6 to 12, but also engage a lot of our high school and college students with master classes. Instead, we are asking, I believe, four of the five musicians this season will be producing how-to YouTube videos for anyone who's either just getting started with an instrument or is interested in the history of jazz, to even the experts that just want to hear from other experts. So I'm really excited to be able to share those two and continue our goal and our mission of not only creating amazing performances, but also having a positive impact on the community as far as educating and inspiring new young musicians. So. Mm-hmm.
I would like to ask this next question, and especially in lieu of what has been happening recently with Lincoln Calling that you were a part of. So how have these streaming shows evolved since March?
I think, you know, at first it's how can we do it ourselves out of our own bedroom? You know, I was experimenting with a lot of these video streaming platforms, but I think we really saw the limitations that we had with phones that are on our cameras or our laptops and the quality of the audio and video. So I then started researching more and programs that we could potentially pay for and partners that we could potentially find. And we're really lucky that we had a group here in Lincoln that for the past couple of years has already been using this format of streaming local bands and helping them raise money through basic tipping. We're really fortunate to have the Basement Creators willing to partner with us to really bring their expertise and bring their knowledge of technology to the table. And that really has helped. We were lucky that we had a group that had the platform, had been making videos for a number of years so that we could show to our sponsors that we have a really legitimate partner and that we're going to produce a polished final product.
Jazz in June has been a cornerstone for Lincoln's community involvement. And I'm wondering how this festival is going to keep that up this year, or if maybe possibly this will be a format that might be used more in the future as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jazz in June has always been that perfect event to bring the university and city of Lincoln community together. We hope that that's still a glue that is part of this streaming event. I think it's important that we've shifted to using local musicians. I also, you know, we're going to push folks to share their home setups, you know, their picnics in their living rooms or maybe their backyards. We're also encouraging folks to support local eateries. Go and get takeout from your favorite local restaurant. Bring it home as you may have done during Jazz in June in normal years. Frequent in those downtown businesses, grab your picnic and taking it to the Sheldon green space. I think now it's continue to support those local businesses, continue to support our community just from the comfort of your own home.
Do you want people still to reach out and ask you about weather events and how those are going to affect the performances?
Well, I have had a lot of difficulties with weather in the past few years, but
yeah.
The good thing about this year is that we're using a indoor location that the Basement Creators have been able to set up their studio in. We are using the Storm Cellar, which is a new venue that's located in Indian Village here in Lincoln. And while public won't be able to experience the concerts firsthand, they will be able to get, I think, a really great experience through their computer, TV, whatever that may be.
Well, how can our listeners help with Jazz in June as it approaches?
There will be an opportunity to tip. It's really very easy to, once you watch the streams, you can go in and tip the musicians. And all of that money that is generated, we normally are able to pass the bucket at our Jazz in June events. And that, you know, that's a pretty large chunk of our income. So I encourage folks to reach in for that digital pocket change and continue to tip so that we're able to keep Jazz in June alive, but also support the artists that are playing. Make sure that you tune in. You can tune in either on Facebook or YouTube. Again, please share pictures of your picnic setup at home on social media. Tag us. We love to see all the community engagement and people really enjoying Jazz in June from anywhere.
Our guest today has been festival music director and curator Spencer Munson. Thanks again, Spencer. It was nice talking to you.
Yeah, you too, Brandon.
The 2020 Jazz in June Festival will stream one show per week in June every Tuesday. You can find the link to watch from home on the Jazz in June Facebook page. We will provide a link to that on our website at netnebraska.org/radio. For Friday Live, I'm Brandon Thomas.
I'm I'm Genevieve Randall. Lincoln poet Marge Sizer is back this week, and she reads three of her new poems for us.
So all of us have family stories that go way back, and sometimes it's a good thing to write about. Here's one of the stories my family tells. It's in the voice of a woman named Wilma. The poem is called Wilma Tells About Louie. Louie was alone on the farm. My sister and I were in a cold house in town. No money, a little wood. We stayed in bed under the quilt to keep warm during the blizzard. I got up to make pancakes and keep the cook stove going, then back to bed. And then the knock, I'll never forget. From the other side of the door, he said, "It's Louie." I shouted, "It's Louie, come to see if we're all right." Two pancakes left over, and he ate them rolled up with jelly. He said, "Do you have enough wood?" And I said, "Yes, if we're careful." He said, "The horse, no place for the horse, so I must go back." We went to the door with him, the wind bad howling when we opened the door, the horse waiting, the reins tied to the pump handle. He said, "Got to get back." His coat was thin. I had the quilt around my shoulders. I couldn't leave the door open to watch him go. I closed the door. Nobody saw him put his foot into the stirrup and mount the horse. I was wearing three pairs of socks, the quilt around my shoulders. 3 miles to town to find out if we were okay. Had wood for the stove. He rode 3 miles and back in those drifts. You know he got off and walked a lot of it. The horse behind him. He's not dead as long as someone remembers. He was young then. His hair under the old shore cap, the ear flaps. We had not let the fire go out. We had wood. His foot into the stirrup, the shape of his shoulders in the old plaid coat. I like poems that deal with ordinary life, real life, everyday things that real people feel. Like, once in a while, you might wonder about life. Will I keep on learning new skills all my life? What's coming next? Spoiler alert for this poem, there's a snake in it. It's a short one called, What If I'm Mostly Done? What if no new skill is waiting? Well then, I'll get into this old, used-to-be-varnished wooden boat. I notice the new ones are aluminum, colorful, sleek. And I'll float. I've left the paddles on the grass. Just float wherever. It's a big lake, and I haven't been bored yet today. That thin black whip moving along over the surface is a snake, head up like a black bud, tail like an artist's squiggle, making straight toward me. So far, I'm alone in this boat and still curious. One thing a poem can do is capture the interesting things ordinary people say and the way they say it. Here's what a waitress in a diner might say to you. It's called Monologue by Waitress at Cafe. You doing okay here? More biscuits? I said to this dude yesterday, I said, I have two tables ahead of you. Keep your shirt on. Some people. Real sugar is right there beside the ketchup. The fake stuff you'll find in the little packets. Last time you were in, I remember, I came over and told you we were out of chocolate. Had only pecan, lemon, cherry, raisin cream, and apple. Apple is a given. I told you, but it was the guy in the booth behind you who wanted the chocolate. Chocolate pie is a travesty, if you ask me. Belongs in bonbons. I was married to a chocolate pie guy in the 90s. Everybody makes mistakes. That's what erasers are for.
Nebraska poet Marge Sizer with three of her new poems. We just heard Monologue by Waitress at Cafe. Before that, we heard Wilma Tells About Louie and What If I'm Mostly Done. Ooh. next guest is an author, teacher, motivational speaker, and comedian who has taped shows for HBO, Showtime, performed at comedy clubs in Nebraska and all 48 continental states. She's appeared on radio and television, even traveled with Tom Osborne for a series of talks at high schools. And now she's gearing up for a performance on the Lead Center's Lead Live Online series. Julie Burney will present an evening of laughter, stories, and conversation. That stream is tonight at 7:30 p.m. Julie Burney, it's great to talk with you on Friday Live once again.
Well, thank you for having me back. See, all that experience has paid off. Now I get to be on Facebook Live.
You get to be on Facebook Live and the Leeds website. And I'm assuming you're home in Lincoln, yes?
Yes, I am home in Lincoln, yes. I am sheltering in place.
Is your place set up like a studio now? You're doing this from home, right?
No, I'm just doing it on my laptop computer, and all the high-tech stuff will be handled from some other location that the Lead Center folks will take care of. I'm going to trust them, you know. I'm hoping they'll, I try to get the lighting right so I look healthy and all of that at this end, but otherwise it's up to them, I guess.
Well, now, Julie, your career is really quite varied and interesting, says me. So much travel, too. What's it like going through all the changes that the virus has brought on our lives here?
Well, I will admit that I get a little stir crazy now because I'm home all the time. But, you know, it's forcing me, like it's forcing all of us, to do those things that we have been saying we were going to do around the house that we haven't forever. You know, like finally clean out the storage room and clean out the cupboards and stuff like that. So that's been an interesting adventure.
You can find some interesting things when you do that.
That's right. So I'm hoping that it opens back up again, though, pretty soon, because I miss people.
I miss people, too, for sure. I need a laugh even more these days. How do you feel about that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, definitely. If we don't have a sense of humor, we're not going to make it through all of this. It reminds me of, you know, when my mom and dad have both passed now, but when my dad retired and was home all of the time, all of a sudden my mom said, you know, when your dad retired, we were blissfully happy for about 10 minutes. And then we started to drive each other crazy. And I thought, oh, my goodness, months were in locked up with the people we loved.
Thinking of the beginning of your career, when did you start creating comedy?
It was back in the mid-80s. That's making me sound pretty old. Prior to doing a stand-up and motivational speaking, I was a college professor, and I was a member and leader of an improvisational comedy troupe. And so it's always been part of what I do, but as far as going solo performance, it wasn't until the mid-80s.
And when you're preparing for a show or performance, how do you go about it?
Well, listen, you pay attention, you watch the news, you watch other people, you know, I always say that it's not so much that I'm funny, that life is funny, and I'm a pretty good observer of seeing what's happening and stuff. So it's watching things like that and then, you know, making a commentary about it. And plus, I'm all about real life situations. You know, I always talk about stories that have happened to me and it could have just happened to me that day. Sometimes, I don't know, people say, do you know what you're going to say? And I go, well, I have an idea, but I'm always kind of surprised myself at what comes out of my mouth when I'm standing in front of a microphone. So
it's good to surprise yourself, Julie.
Yeah. Keeps me on my toes. Yeah, sometimes I'll say something and then I laugh because I think, well, I didn't even know I was going to say that. And it was funny. That's good.
What are you finding inspiring these days?
Listen, people are inspiring me. I was very fortunate to grow up in a home that was very positive attitude outlook. And I'm telling you, when people, you know, are stressing out about all this stuff, I try to find the good in it and see the positive in it. Like, for example, you know, all of a sudden everybody's out walking their dogs. I mean, I never knew my neighborhood. I never knew all my neighbors had these dogs, you know, because there's dogs all over the place. And I love sitting on the front porch and talking to neighbors as they walk by. And it's just fun seeing all the people. And one of my favorite things that's happening is that it seems like people are talking more to each other. It used to be when people go out for walks around the neighborhood, they just walk, you know, they might say hi to each other. But now they're having conversations. And I just love that because I'm all about that communication thing.
Julie Burney, it's so nice to talk to you. The next guest on the Lead Live Online series, we will have a link to that stream on the Friday Live page where you can find more information. That's at netnebraska.org/radio. Julie, thank you for chatting with me and really have a great time tonight.
Thank you. I will, and I hope you tune in.
This is Friday Live. I'm Genevieve Randall, informing and inspiring Nebraska with unique programming. This is NET Radio. If you enjoyed that interview or an earlier interview and wish you could hear it again, you can play today's show as many times as you like online or download it. We podcast this show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. The address is netnebraska.org. A virtual show in Omaha will be presented by Y Arts. We'll learn more ahead here on Friday Live. There's also a new theater space in the western part of the state in Scotts Bluff. And in about 12 minutes, I'll talk with one of the judges who participated in the recognition of five Nebraska students recognized for their writing. Right now, we get to hear a preview from an upcoming record titled You Let the Light In. It's an album by Hope Dunbar. Hope is a singer-songwriter who has also curated a listening room series at Old Glory Theater in Seward. She chose her song Don't Give Up for us this week here on NET Radio's Friday Live. That's Hope Dunbar with her song Don't Give Up, a track from her upcoming record, You Let the Light In, here on Friday Live on NET Radio. Next, a group that runs a historic theater in Scotts Bluff is expanding on an old idea by planning a new drive-in theater in that western Nebraska city. Fred Knapp of NET News has more.
Friends of the Midwest Theater has been showing drive-in movies since March in the Legacy of the Plains Museum parking lot in Gehring. NET News caught up with the group's executive director, Billy Estes, as he was surveying a new, larger venue.
I'm sitting in the parking lot of what is going to be the new Midwest Skyview Drive-In Theater. It's going to be located out by the Western Nebraska Regional Airport out on the east side of Scotts Bluff. Looking out into the valley, I can see the Sugar Factory and Scotts Bluff National Monument. It's going to be a great place to watch a movie and see the view.
Plans call for space for up to 165 cars, with enough space for families to sit outside and still observe social distancing.
It allows families to have a taste of nostalgia and that experience of going to the movies, which I think is this uniquely American way of storytelling that we've crafted and mastered, and be able to do that in such a way that provides that safe distancing measures outside.
Estes says the economics of reopening the indoor theater at only 25% of capacity don't make sense, and drive-ins fulfill an important need.
We're looking for something to do to be out and get social. I mean, I think our human nature is to be social, and I think that we're looking as humankind's ways to do that that appear to be safe and hopefully are safe at the same time. And I think that's where this renewed interest in drive-ins has come from.
Estes says he fields questions every day from communities around the country thinking about doing something similar. And he says he hopes some good effects linger after the pandemic has passed.
I think if good things can come out of the pandemic, such as we as a country learn to sort out our ways and supporting the local food movement or the local business movement, I think that there's a hope that drive-in theaters can also find that sustainability out of this pandemic issue that's brought it back to the top.
The Midwest Skyview Drive-In Theater is scheduled to open June 5th. And what will be the first movie shown? Estes can't say for sure, but he offers some pretty big hints.
It's yet to be confirmed, but I can tell you that I'm looking at a movie that invokes dreaming and fields, because this is one of those moments that you build it and they will show up.
I'm Fred Knapp.
Support for programming on NET Radio comes from The Ross. Although The Ross is temporarily closed because of the coronavirus pandemic, movies are now streaming from links on the website. Currently available at The Ross are 12 movies, The Best of Cat Video Fest, the Metropolitan Opera, and the London National Theater. For more information, theross.org. And support for humanities-related programming on NET Radio comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage in history and culture on the web at humanitiesnebraska.org. This is Friday Live on listener-supported NET Radio and netnebraska.org. Why Arts, founded in 1990 in Omaha, is hosting a virtual story time and art show today. Corbin Hirschhorn of KVNO has more.
Why Arts will present a multimedia experience tonight. Their Sleepy Hollow virtual story time and art show will feature a performance of Washington Irving's classic, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, with original composition, Foley, visual art, and puppeteering. It's a cinematic experience, according to Why Arts executive director Kim Jubenville, all accessible to the public via Zoom.
It's a movie. We have taken and layered the vocal narration, the music, and the artwork, and we have beautifully blended them all together in what should be a visual and oral extravaganza.
This evening will begin promptly at 6 p.m. with a virtual red carpet. Jubenville, Barber, and their puppet co-hosts will be interviewing all talent involved in the project, and Sleepy Hollow will begin around 6:30. This ambitious performance exemplifies Why Art's mission in aiding both local artists and patrons.
what YArts does is we provide art programming to underserved populations, and we've been doing it since 1990. And what has always been kind of consistent is that we have a team of professional artists, and they can be visual artists, theatrical artists, dancers, singers, musicians, and we put them with our clients who are generally other nonprofits who work with persons who are in need and underserved. And the arts have an amazing power of healing and connection. So we have always had a really strong roster of professional artists. And currently we have an amazing roster. We've got over 40 professional artists.
Engaging with children, YArts Kids on the Block puppets will be part of the show. And Melody James, played by Stephanie Anderson, was able to join the conversation.
If we were going to describe Melody, she's about 3.5 feet tall.
Yeah.
Her skin is purple. Her eyes are blue. She's got black hair and some really pretty yellow ribbons in her hair and eyeglasses and a real pretty pink dress. She happens to be a puppet. Melody, what else would you like to say about yourself?
I'm super beautiful.
That goes without saying. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I have lots of really good friends, and some are puppets mm-hmm. like me, and some are human people, and human people are okay too.
Co-host Barber talked about the importance of YArts' foray into virtual territory.
In my understanding of it, for YArts to say this is how we are going to, this is going to be our new normal. This is a way for us to walk into this virtual realm. And so it's kind of like using the performance arts and the visual arts as entry points for the audience and introduce them to the kids on the block who's been like lighting it up with the, you know. But I think it's all tied. We are presenting storytelling, visual art, music, acting, all that to tie it all in and to like basically kind of like represent ourselves as this is what we have to offer. We are using our resources to give you new content, to stay fresh. And not only are we staying fresh, but we're touching on necessary topics. And I think the kids on the block, talking about different abilities, talking about diversity, very relevant today, especially for our youth. So it's just a way of using what you have and presenting it in a new conversation.
YArts' Sleepy Hollow virtual story time and arts show is tonight, starting at 6 p.m. on Zoom. For more information, including how to join the meeting or how to view the virtual gallery, visit yartsinc.org. That's whyartsinc.org. Or find the event on Facebook. For Friday Live, I'm Corbin Hirshhorn.
I'm Genevieve Randall. More music next from a recording of Nebraska Chamber Players. This is the third movement of a quintet by Mozart, the Minuetto. We heard a minuetto from a quintet by Mozart, the third movement of that work. That's from a recording of members of the Nebraska Chamber Players here on Friday Live. Stay with us. We'll learn about winners of a National Writing Award, and we'll hear some poetry from the NET Archives from Bill Clefcorn. A couple move from London to a small English village with their whimsical son, Lanny. On this week's All About Books, Pat Leach reviews the new novel from Max Porter, who adds a twist to the peaceful scene.
With just Lanny and the village, Porter could write a fine novel. But there's an additional character here called Dead Papa Toothwort, an ancient but ageless mythical figure from the earth. He can take the form of trees and other plants or creatures. He can wreak havoc. He pays close attention to the voices in the village, and in particular, attention to Lanny, in whom he recognizes something apart from the others.
Learn more about Lanny and his disappearance in our review. It's online now at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. Students from Nebraska were chosen for a National Writing Award. Hastings College, an affiliate of the Scholastic Art and Writing Awards, announced those winners last month. Joining me now is Jennifer Beam, one of the judges for those awards. Jennifer, it's great to meet you.
It's great to be on the phone with you. Thanks for having me.
The students that were recognized are from Lincoln, Omaha, and Beatrice. Are those students all in different categories of writing? How do those prizes work?
They are in all different categories of writing. We had students submit their pieces in areas like science fiction and fantasy, poetry, short story, personal essay, and memoir. And we judged, I think it was about 113 submissions, and sent on about 18 students to the nationals, and 7 students received awards. Regionally, 5 students nationally. So they were in all different areas.
What's the process of this for the students? How long ago did they start making those submissions?
Students submitted their pieces in the fall to us. And then we did our regional judging here in Nebraska. I believe it was around Christmas time, right over our winter break, and then announced our local awards in March, I believe it was, March or April.
And Jennifer, how did you get involved in becoming a judge for this?
Well, I have a background in broadcast journalism, and I received my master's in liberal arts with a writing emphasis. So the faculty member who is in charge of putting this together really wanted a variety of faculty and staff members who had a little bit of a background in maybe applying their writing skills to a career, or who used their writing in the classroom. So I was more than happy to get involved in this, and I was extremely impressed with the level of writing that our students submitted from across the state. It was so much fun to read all of these works.
I see the program has been around since 1923, and it's some pretty impressive names that have been recognized in the past as teens, like Joyce Carol Oates, Kay Walking Stick, Stephen King, and even Andy Warhol. So what happens next with these 5 Nebraska students who were chosen? I know this year is a little different with the pandemic, and we can't have, you know, an in-person award ceremony. So how will these students receive their awards?
These students were all notified already that they did receive their national medals, and we did have one student who also won an American Voices Award. They were supposed to have a ceremony June 4th, I believe it was, in New York City at Carnegie Hall. Obviously, that's not going to be able to happen. So I'm not sure nationally what they're going to do for a recognition, but I do believe that they are still receiving certificates in the mail, the scholarship dollars that go along with these awards, too. So we're really trying to just get the word out that these students place very highly nationally as well. I mean, to have 5 students win national medals and one of them to be an American voice is phenomenal for us.
I've been talking here with Jennifer Beam. She's with Hastings College and is a judge who participated in the selection this year of award winners for the Scholastic Art and Writing Awards. Five of those winners are from Nebraska. Jennifer, thank you for talking with me.
Yes, I'm happy to be here.
And a big congratulations to those winners, Olivia Achtemeyer of Beatrice, Daisy Friedman and Emma Murnix of Omaha, and Ellen Pan and Jingming Yu of Lincoln. This is Friday Live on NET Radio. I'm Genevieve Randall. State poets before Matt Mason, the state poet, was William Clefcorn, longtime professor of English at Nebraska Wesleyan University in Lincoln. Clefcorn recorded a poetry series for NET Radio called Poetry of the Plains until he died in 2011. From that series, here are two of his unpublished poems.
Always kind of liked that term, half moon. What you see, of course, is half of the moon. But the moon's all there. The other half you can't see, but it's still there. And just because you can't see it doesn't mean it doesn't exist, does it? Night of the half moon, as if to compensate for what is hidden, the visible half of the moon has doubled its brightness, or so it seems to one who for so many years wanted to believe in the doctrine of natural compensation. My brother, at a tender age, yielding himself to a majority of the seven deadly sins. So, to compensate, I overbrushed my teeth and scoured my flesh with Life Boy and gave my heart to Jesus on a bi-weekly basis. I stand now at the largest window in a house that is blessedly small. Watching a moon so perfectly halved, I cannot be sure whether it's waxing or waning. It loves me, it loves me not. Tomorrow at this time I'll know, unless clouds obscure the answer, in which case I'll make an informed guess, or wait for the skies to clear, patience being an acknowledged, if not one of the seven cardinal, virtues. My brother, meanwhile, having lifted himself by his bootstraps, has lifted me by bringing me mercifully down, his dark side serving to compensate for my ungodly, because unnatural, sheen. As if my life were not a full moon because only one half was showing. As if to deny is to remove the dust that stops uncountable mouths. As if only the visible can be seen. Here's another new poem. It's called And Then Some. I was reading a poem by Marjorie Bettner called Three Sea Hope. She has a line in that poem that goes like this. The sound no sound makes. We call that, I think, customarily silence. But the way she phrased it, the sound no sound makes, intrigued me. The aftermath of a quarrel, after the words come out and are finally silenced, the silence is so distinct. And then some. It is, of course, the dissonance of thought, cogs of the mind, sadly in need of lubrication. It is most certainly the echo, ongoing, of what they said before the sound of no sound began. It is surely a pity and a shame to have let loose the hounds of what cannot be restrained. It is no doubt what they deserve, they being mouths with bodies so dutifully appended. The good news is that bad news rarely lasts forever. The good news is that which unaccountably breaks the sound of the absence of sound. And they are at it again, saying all there is to say, its sincerity unparalleled, and then some.
We heard the late Bill Clefcorn reading two of his unpublished poems, and then some, and before that, Night of the Half Moon. Coming up this morning here on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert, and this afternoon, Laura Black with Classics by Request. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of the show at netnebraska.org/radio. Portions of Friday Live are pre-recorded. Our theme music was written and performed by Alexios Anist. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Brandon Thomas, engineer James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall. Support for programming on NET Radio comes from the Sunday Farmers Market at College View. Open Sundays 10 to 2. The market offers all local produce and farm products located at 48th and Prescott. Guidelines for social distancing at the market can be found at sundayfarmersmarket.org. Support for programming also comes from Medica, offering health insurance in Nebraska for individuals and families, as well as Medicare plans and employer group insurance. For more information, medicacovered.com. Medica, we've got you covered.